Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Full Tank Motorcycle Podcast. It's me, Rob, from the YouTube channel Motorbob. And as always, I'm joined by Tim. How are things?
They're good. They're very busy. Non-bike related, so I won't get into it. But yeah, otherwise good.
House move, innit?
Yeah, it is.
I'm still reeling from last week when you said about the new bike as well. For anyone who didn't listen, Tim's bought a Monster S2R, which I just can't wait to see, mate.
Yeah, so can I. I'm looking forward to seeing it for the first time. It's in the Midlands near my brother because he was more local to it. And it was one of those bikes that I knew I could trust. If he thought it was okay, I wouldn't need to see it because I'm quite familiar with it. So it was a safe bet.
So your brother saw it before you handed over the cash?
He did. So if there's anything wrong, then I defer to him.
He's going
to
be on the hook, mate. There is always that anxiety when you've bought a bike like that. I bought one as well like that, where it just got shipped to me. And of course, you do have the right to send it back. A lot of couriers will have that as sort of part of their job, is to let you have a look at it and see if you want to confirm that you want to buy it. But it is still a bit nerve-wracking, especially when you got your hopes up, isn't it? Because the photos can look fantastic and the reality can be quite poor.
Yeah.
Let's just say the least.
Hopefully not that bleak this time. I do think I'm safe. I don't know. It depends what his standards are like. If his standards are rock bottom and nowhere near mine, then we'll find out in a couple of weeks' time.
I think it did look pretty good in the... Oh, no, you didn't send me a picture. I was just looking at the
official... Oh, no, I didn't. Did I not? I'll send it to you.
No, I just looked at the official press photos, so that's why it looked good.
Yeah, they look great with
it. Because you told me it was a black one.
Yes.
I've got to say, the video that comes to mind when you actually take possession of it, mate, is maybe a comparison of V-twins of that era. Yours being the optimal peak pinnacle bike of a sort of naked V-twin that could be bought around that time. And then I'll bring my SV650 and that'll be the imitation budget-friendly option, and we can ride them back to back and say, is the Monster S2R worth it, or should you just buy an SV650 instead?
I think that's quite a good comparison. Yeah, I do. Yeah, they are sort of, yeah, they're quite comparable, aren't they?
Ooh, that looks extremely clean in the pictures.
Yeah,
we'll edit
right?
some onto the video podcast so people can have a little look maybe. But that looks spectacular. And also, I've got to say, it's going to be quite loud, isn't it?
Yes, they're coming off immediately.
I don't Same with your SV, though, silencers. Right?
No, I don't know what the hell they are. It looks like someone's just made their own version out of just some rough steel. I'm changing that as soon as I possibly can, yeah.
One of the best things about that bike has to be the A, single-sided swing arm, and B, the fact that it's made out of steel trellis and the chain sort of passes through behind the trellis.
Yeah.
That is very nice looking. Not many bikes as well that get a steel trellis swing arm.
Yeah.
Indian FTR springs to mind.
Yeah, it's less all I can think commonly of. Seen, isn't it? Yeah.
Looks very, very cool. Anyway, moving on swiftly, mate. We'll get onto that in more detail once you've actually been able to ride it. Today, we're going to do some news stories, look through some of the stories that perhaps didn't make it onto the main Motobob channel, but still caught our interest. And so we're going to jump in with a couple of new rumored bikes. And one of them might tickle your Italiano fancy and your specific Moto Guzzi fancy. A small capacity twin cylinder Moto Guzzi retro, let's say.
Well, something jumps out at me immediately, but I think you'll get onto it.
Yeah, okay. So this bike was actually spied a few months before these most recent spy shots, and the press were labeling it as a naked retro Aprilia because it looks like it's got the same parallel twin as their RS457 sports bike that they just announced earlier this year. So that's why everyone thought it's going to be Aprilia. But of course, Aprilia are part of the Piaggio group, as are Moto Guzzi. And so now they've added a different tank shape, I think, which looks a lot more like something you'd see on a V7. And given that retro bikes don't exist in the Aprilia lineup, but they kind of do in the Moto Guzzi lineup, everyone's now saying this is realistically going to be a Moto Guzzi, but just borrowing the engine from a bike from a sister company, let's say.
Yeah. I think looking at the tank, I think you're right. To me, it's the V85. It's like a baby V85 for that tank.
Yeah, sort of flares out towards the bottom.
Yes.
And also, if you scroll down, there's a shot of the tail end.
Yes,
and
it's so the got lights as well, yeah.
Exactly. Those, what they say, are inspired by fighter jets' shape of tail lights. They say they're like afterburners, which maybe, you know, you can buy into on like the Stelvio or the V100. When you're down to a 457.
Still a fighter jet? What are you talking about?
And you pin the throttle. Does it give you the afterburner levels of thrust? Possibly not. Look, a few of the little highlights on this bike. It feels like they've tried to do a bit of a retro job with the brown saddle. That's a classic. The round headlight. Well, that's about it. Oh, the fuel tank shape. The rest of it, though, I mean, it pretty much could be lifted straight off the 457. So upside down gold anodized forks, a TFT display up front that's sort of on a crude bracket. I'm sure they'll do a better job of designing that in for the final bike. The front wheel with the Bibray radially mounted single disc in terms of the brakes. That's off the RS457, probably the swing arm. And one big change I've noticed is they've moved the sort of monoshock off to one side to give it the look of a twin shock bike.
Yes.
But then if you look at it from the other side,
it looks a bit lopsided, doesn't it? It looks like it's just going to keel over a little bit. Obviously, it's structurally sound, but it is a weird look.
I guess on this particular bike as well, of course, they've taped it up so that you can't really pick out how it's going to look for the final version. And you can also see those blue things on the suspension, which I guess are something like stroke sensors, so they can measure how the suspension's reacting and fine-tune that for this sort of riding.
That makes sense.
But it looks... I don't know.
The conflict in your voice then was funny. Yeah, I've got to be honest, I am conflicted, because I think I like and I'm... I say loathe is too hard. I like it in equal measure as I kind of will critique it. And the biggest thing for me is the engine configuration. And you can say it's a sort of picky point, but that is the beating heart of a Moto Guzzi to me.
And it's a liquid-cooled parallel twin that looks like it's off a modern bike. I was going to say, do you know what this is exactly like? Have you ever seen, get ready for this, one of those microwaves, right, where... they've made the knobs and stuff look old-fashioned to try and make it fit into like an old-school kitchen. But you're like, microwaves didn't exist then. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, you said we're moving house. Yeah, we've got one. So yeah,
you got a retro microwave?
Yeah, somewhat retro-looking. Yeah,
but fundamentally, the technology there is relatively modern. That's all I'm saying, and that's what this is like. It's a microwave, a thoroughly modern bike. With like little chrome knobs on it and maybe painted in like a pastel green, you know, like a Smeg microwave.
Yeah, that's upper, you know, that's high quality though. No, I really do like it. I think that is going to be a really fun bike to ride. It's Aprilia formed, so I'd imagine it's going to handle well for a bike of its capacity in the sort of bracket that it plays in. And I actually think it'll sit into that market really quite well. And the Moto Guzzi looks, I think, do lend themselves to it. I think it's a really good thing. But for me, personally, is it the one I would own? If I was getting a Moto Guzzi, I really would want that transverse V-twin instead of a parallel.
Air-cooled, you know, all the vibes. Yeah. Agree. It's one of those bikes where the headlight, the tank, the tail light, the saddle is where they put the retro work. And the bottom half, wheel, suspension, engine, exhaust, rear shock, swing arm, rear wheel, they can't really do anything about, because it'd be really expensive to start really fitting different components. And so it's kind of like business downstairs, party up top. A bit like an XSR 900 is like that. You know, the XSR 900 is built on the MTA9.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're saying it's like a reverse mullet of a bike is what you're saying, yeah?
Exactly. But I agree. I think it'll probably be good to ride. Yeah. The question is, though, does this like small capacity bike that's obviously meant to sell in high volumes, but they're more affordable, and maybe they'll target the Asian market with these as well, where smaller bikes sell in bigger numbers, does this sort of bike cheapen the Moto Guzzi brand for you? No. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying.
It's purely a commercial pursuit rather than one of passion and history and heritage and knowing how to make a really good bike of this nature. Like, it's not something they really do. They're just like, oh, people will buy that if we slap our badge and tank shape on it.
Sure. What you want, I suppose, is if you're buying a bike, is you want to feel like or think that there's been no compromise, that they, you know, their vision has been executed as they wanted it to be, and they haven't had to make sort of budgetary compromises and things like that. But it is a business. And this is the reason that, you know, bike manufacturers sometimes struggle and go under and get bought out by other companies, is because they don't think in this way. So you kind of have to do both. So to, you know, play on their side a little bit, I completely understand what they're doing. And at the end of the day, it will be a fun bike to ride. For me, it doesn't cheapen the brand. It's just not necessarily the one I would buy, but I don't really care if somebody else is riding around it. And it's different to, say, KTM, where they all roughly look the same. I think with this one, it does look different than their bigger, more sort of high-end bikes, if you like.
It slightly increases my appreciation of the Triumph 400s, in that I feel like Triumph went a level deeper in terms of making sure that it looked a bit more designed all round. Like, it's the same, who's building it? Bajaj are building the Triumph one. And they build the KTM singles as well, the 390s and stuff. Mm. And so they've used very similar dimensions for the single cylinder engine, for example. But Triumph have obviously said, like, we want the engine to look like it's got some sort of air-cooled style fins on it, and some of the shapes that you'll see on the Triumph engine cases that run back for, you know, 50, 60, 70 years.
Yeah.
So I feel like they went really deep on that, and maybe Moto Guzzi could have gone a bit further with this in terms of just getting that authentic look. Mm. But I'm almost certain this will probably be more fun to ride, because that little twin is actually a 270 degree crank, and most little parallel twins like this, like the Kawasaki Z500 or the Honda CB500, for example, have those flat, farty 180 degree cranks. Whereas this bike, at that sort of capacity level, is one of the few, and the RS457 that it gets the engine from, that actually has that 270 crank. I'm looking forward to riding this one when it comes out, hopefully. But
so
I wouldn't say it's a thing of beauty visually. That's the summary there.
I mean, the tape on the tank doesn't necessarily help, but then the spy shots. So it will look better, Rob. Trust.
You've got to try and imagine that that's not there. Yeah. The next one I just picked up on Visor Down, which I thought might be of interest. And this one is also a little bit different in terms of the engine configuration, because they're saying that they've copyrighted the name Z400 RS. And the idea, they say, is that they might be bringing in, you know, the Z650 RS, Z900 RS retros. We're all familiar with those. Mm. Both really like those bikes. Mm. Very good looking. That they might fit out a 400 version of that bike with the inline four that you get in the pretty recent ZX4R and ZX4RR sports bike. So it's like a little 400 sports bike. Mm. This is a really weird one for me, because I've just borrowed that bike, the ZX4RR, and it is very distinctive in how it makes its power. Are you familiar with that bike?
Familiar with it, but I haven't ridden it. To me, this is, to get ahead of myself a little bit, giving me severe Balius vibes. It's reminding me of my... Because the point is, right, they made a sports version of that one, the 250 RR, or whatever it would be anyway, Z250. So I had the naked version of that one, which looks like the sort of retro cafe racer style. Single headlight, round tank. So this is giving me that sort of vibes, right? And it... To be honest, riding that bike, no, it didn't really make sense on a naked bike, because it's a revvy engine.
Yes. Well, I remember you bringing up your bilious and me saying I've never ridden anything like that. But then having borrowed the ZX4RR for the past couple of weeks, I've got to say, it is really, really weird to ride something like that, where it makes around that 70 horsepower mark. So you're like, oh yeah, it's going to feel a bit like an MT-07 or... the Kawasaki 650 twins, or, you know, a Triumph Trident, all in that sort of range, making between 60 and 70 newton meters of peak torque. And they all make their peak power at roughly similar revs. And if you had a dyno chart of them all, the ZX4RR would be somewhere over here, like revving really high, way less torque, similar on power, but you have to just like rinse it. And it's really weird because it's got the sound of a big inline four that you're kind of used to from borrowing big sports bikes and stuff. For example, the Brutale 1000 RR that we both rode out in Italy. It's got that, it's like a slightly smaller version of that sound.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't have the...
anything to back it up, yeah?
So, I mean, it sort of does if you get it up to 14,500 RPM where it makes it its peak power. The only thing I will say is if you do quite a lot of commuting, but you love the sound of an inline four, you can be happily sitting behind a Qashqai doing the school run. Mm-hmm. This is going at like 30 miles an hour. Bang it down into first gear and it's like... And then you can just be like going between first and second gear, and it sounds like you're on the home straight, mate, at Mugello. but
that's what they said about the Balius, right? And before I got it, because you do little bits of research, and I was like, oh, that does sound fun. And then, yeah, exactly that. And they were like, sounds like a GP bike. And if you stuck the right cans on it, it really genuinely would. Too aggressive for what you're doing, really, but fun to play with.
That's it. Maybe it suits the sports bike better as well. And in a way, I started to really appreciate that bike by the time of the I'd given it back, because it's a sport bike you can absolutely use all of on the road. It's like something different in a market where everything's kind of similar. It is nice to have a bit of variety and something that is so, so different and sounds fantastic and all that sort of stuff. As for whether it fits this application, though, we're saying yes, maybe to a little sports bike like that. Not so sure on the naked front for the Bilius. And a retro... It feels like the sort of people that buy these are looking for something that's easy to ride and just hop on. And the Z650 RS kind of does that quite nicely. It's torquey twin. Does this engine character really suit the retro? In some ways, it is quite true to the original inline four Kawasaki's that it's styled on. But in terms of like, will people actually buy it rather than just appreciate it on YouTube? Who knows? I guess the proof will be in the pudding, mate.
Yeah, it will be. If I had to put some money on it now, I would say it's not going to sell in the same sort of numbers as the fully fared version.
It's also like quite often people, motorcycle companies give a slightly different tune to naked or retro versions of a bike than they do to the sports. You know, it's the same engine in terms of the like overall architecture, but just tuned more for torque and mid-range or geared differently or something. Yes. But I'm just not sure how far you can take that engine in terms of
real short gears on that. Yeah, there's not a lot you can do.
And maybe that's slightly less desirable than the potential Moto Guzzi retro that we just discussed then. Moving swiftly on, next up we've got KTM, another story from Cycle World. And it says that they're moving more production to China. I can't quite figure out from this article if they're moving all production to China or part of their production to China. But it says they're cutting 300 jobs at their Austria plant and moving... Well, everything below the 400s, as I said earlier, is already built by Bajaj out in India. But stuff above that, I think they're basically strengthening this collaboration, I was going to say, with CF Moto to build even more of their bikes out there, which is kind of interesting, isn't it? I mean, firstly, they've been doing that anyway with their 790 Duke and 790 Adventure. I don't know if you've seen those up close yet.
Yeah, I will have done. Were they at Motorcycle Life?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. We checked them out there, actually. Very good point. And looking at the stand there, you wouldn't immediately walk up to one and be like, that one's built in China.
No.
They just look exactly the same in terms of fit.
And they had them side by side with the 890s and things and the rest of their range.
Exactly.
And I wouldn't, you couldn't really tell there's a difference. But then it's the same componentry. So I think for me, it more comes down to how it's constructed. But if they can be on top of it, and obviously they've trialed it with the 790. So if they're going to move more bikes over there, then surely that just means that the results they're getting so far have been to their liking.
Yes. And I will say, having spent a couple of weeks with those bikes, the 790s, I didn't have any reliability issues. You wouldn't expect anything, of course, but I can't speak for the longer term, but one would assume the build quality is pretty much as good as what you'll find from their Austrian plants, because it'll be the same processes and same quality control. But I guess it's still got some questions for the KTM buyer.
Yeah.
Number one, are people happy for them to keep their price the same but move their production to somewhere else where it's probably going to cost them less? So they're just growing their margins and not really passing any savings on to the customer. How would you feel about that? Let's say you bought a 20 grand, top of the range, nearly 20 grand anyway, you know, Super Duke with all the trimmings, electronic suspension, the Evo version.
Yeah.
A couple of years back, two, 3 years back, PCP'd it, maybe loved it, and thought, I'm just going to get the new 1390 version. Maybe it costs about the same. So you just chop your old one in at the dealer, take PCP on the new version, but you know that it's being produced somewhere that's cheaper and you're paying the same amount. Like, do you feel bugged by that, or is it just a case of paying what you're willing to pay? I mean, that's ultimately how you price things.
Well, first of all, you've locked me into PCP. I see what you've done there. Well done. Good. Well played.
I should be in sales.
It's the same as the dealership, Will. So now I'm locked into the system, and every 3 years I have to trade it in and get something new. And I never really own it. But yeah, it would make me question whether I wanted to go with a different bike, I think, or a different brand that wasn't doing that. And there is no reason necessarily for that. It would just be a gut feeling of mine where I just kind of want to go, like you say, right, they're cheaping out a little bit. And if another brand isn't doing that, then they wouldn't feel maybe quite as cheap. Maybe they feel a bit more premium to me just as a consumer. I think it's a little bit of a misassumption on that one, but that's probably where I'd go.
But we just said the 790s are indistinguishable.
Yeah, but if you're, like you say, if it entered my mind that yes, they're actually just doing it to increase their margins, and I understand it's a business, you know, it is what it is, but I think it would be enough to at least make me look at another manufacturer that wasn't doing that.
Because you want something with authenticity, or?
A little bit. I also feel bad for the 300 employees in Austria that are just axing. That sucks.
Yeah, I suppose so. But ultimately, the argument is normally we either cut that staff and move it to China, or there are no jobs.
I completely get it. But then they are, I was surprised with how passionate they are about their machines to a Ducati standard when I went on a trip with some of the guys from KTM, and yes. My assumption erroneously was that they were a little bit more clinical and that they didn't really have the same sort of passion for it, that it was just a logical job that just make them well. But no, they really are in Austria very passionate about the brand, the same way that Italians are about Ducati.
So they're giving it the big ones on the brand, like where this really performance based, like proud Austrian company. And then you feel like there's a disconnect with what they're actually doing in terms of production.
And also, I just wonder what, you know, Austrians feel about that. If there are any listening, then let us know.
Shout out to our Austrian fan base.
Yeah. Our one Austrian
listener. Let us know in the comments what you think. Obviously, the podcast is available on like all audio podcast players, but there is the YouTube version with the video. So please do leave comments as to what you think about this and whether it would put you off. Personally, I don't know, to be honest. It seems like the Triumph 400s, for example, you know, that's one of their first forays into building in India. And it sounds like we haven't got hold of one yet. We'll get one soon. But the initial reviews from the launch are pretty good, that they've come up with something really tempting in terms of price. And that's genuinely good fun to ride. But I think there's a difference between this approach of the smaller bikes being built elsewhere and maybe keeping your premium big bikes built in those more expensive locations, then there is maybe licensing out more and more your bikes to be produced by someone else on your behalf. All right, next story, something perhaps a little more light but also sad. It's the most scrapped motorcycles of 2023. This is from Scrap Car Comparison, and it was published on Visor Down, and I thought it was quite an interesting read. Now, there are some caveats around this data. I mean, for example, it's not relative to how many of these bikes have been sold or produced. You'd probably want to take what percentage of those bikes are being scrapped, if you know what I mean, to get any reliability.
Sure.
Naturally, the more popular manufacturers that sell loads of commuter bikes and delivery bikes and scooters and stuff like that are going to be up the top. And number one, Yamaha, is 16% of the bikes that were scrapped last year. They report that models such as the FZS600, the R125, and the YBR125 featured among the most frequently scrapped models. Now, they don't give full model data, but FZS600, is that the Phaser? That's sad. That's such a cool bike.
Yeah.
You know, the 600 Phaser with the square headlights. I really like that bike. I almost bought one of those as my first ever bike because I just went straight to big bike license. And I called my dad and I was like, I found a black first gen Phaser nearby. It looks so cool. And he was like, oh, yeah, Phaser. He's like, I think they're about 100 horsepower, aren't they, inline four? I was like, oh, yeah. And then he was like, maybe just have a look at some other stuff. I think it was the best piece of advice I've ever been given. I ended up with a 65 horsepower Kawasaki ER6N, which was a lot less sexy, but nice and safe. And that's what counts. The R125, I'm quite surprised about. Maybe they get scrapped because everyone who gets an R125 is like new to riding, but thinks they're Rossi and bins them in a bad way. And then YBR125 is the little pizza delivery kind of bike, isn't it? So probably they just get high mileage at a certain point. They say the same for Honda as well. Honda is second at 14%. Mm-hmm. And they say their sort of high listing is down to the age of the popular CBF range, so CBF 125, which debuted in 2004. Mm-hmm. But they sell a lot of bikes. Next one down is Lexmoto at 13%, so nearly as many as Honda. Again, they're just selling a lot of those, although they haven't been around for that long, I don't think, have they?
No, exactly. It's the amount of time they've been around that makes me more concerned about that one being up there, yeah.
And next down, Suzuki, then Piaggio, Kawasaki, Triumph at 4%, Sim, I guess that's like a Lexmoto type thing, 4%. Okay, yeah. Peugeot, I guess they'd be scooters, 3%.
Yeah.
And Keyway. Rounding off the top 10 with 3%. Any surprises?
It's the best thing you can do with a Keyway, to be fair. No. Sorry to anyone who owns a Keyway, if you're listening. Not necessarily. I think I would expect Yamaha and Honda to be up there, and I would expect the 125s to be the majority of that, yeah. So no, not a massive surprise. I agree with you, though. For me, the sad one is the Phaser. Yeah, that's a bit of a shame, that one. Because that's the, like you say, the older, squarer-looking one. And it is a bike that constantly sort of pops up on my radar. And it's one that my dad's always been like, oh yeah, good bike, surprisingly capable, and you know.
Maybe there's some just like fatal problem with them that means they just have to get scrapped now, though. I mean, if you click through to their website, the scrap car comparison website, there's not really that much data on the bikes, but there's a really interesting long post with lots of charts and data about cars. So like which cars hold their value most when they get scrapped, if you know what I mean, like they're worth the most versus what you paid for them and which ones have got the lowest. Also the reasons for scrapping them, like a terminal sort of engine issue or rust.
Or if it's just the Keyway, probably just because you don't like it.
It's not worth it. You only paid 500 quid for it anyway. I mean, probably this will be on the up as well because of the EULA stuff. I think there's an incentive to scrap bikes, isn't there? Anything that doesn't comply with EULA, you can get a grant of like £1,000 just to go and scrap it, which is kind of sad. I mean, consider selling it to someone outside the M25 first so that they can adopt it.
Possibly, if that is true, would explain at least a part of that, because they were quite widely used by dispatch riders.
Oh yeah, the 600s. Yeah, oh, good point. Yeah,
right. So if you're, like you say, if you do get something back for scrapping it and it's not EULA compliant, then maybe that's the reason.
Also, I don't know if the scrap incentive is priced as a relative to the cost of the bike, but I wonder if you could buy a Keyway for like 200 quid and you'd get £1,000 for scrapping it. Do everyone a favor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like collecting cans in America and taking it and trading them in. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just scooping up scooters that have been knocked over in the motorcycle bays.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so sad reading this. Generally speaking, motorcycles don't have as long a lifespan as cars. You could put some sad music behind this, but still suffer from the same sort of issues, such as rust, which must be managed to prolong their time on the roads. After being broken down and crushed, every single one of these top scrapped motorcycles will be put to good use in a number of different ways, while ensuring the absolute minimum of each vehicle goes to waste. That's like the saddest thing I've ever heard in relation to motorcycles. Normally it's like wheelies and burnouts and loud exhausts, and then this is just a paragraph of misery, really.
Yeah.
Put to good use, though. I mean, maybe as like recycled
forks,
metal furniture.
Yeah, a couple of things.
Forks,
cutlery.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And for a lot of those bikes, I would say put to better use. I'd rather have 150 kilograms of forks than some of those bikes. Anyway, I digress. Question on this one. Let's use this. Like I say, rough data, and the listeners at home can play along with this as well. Your last three bikes, Tim, if you use that percentage as a number of points, like if it's 16% for Yamaha, you get 16 points. And a high number indicates that it's only scrap worthy, and therefore whoever gets the highest score has the worst taste in motorcycles. Okay, let me talk you through it.
Yeah, tell me.
My last three motorcycles have been, most recently I picked up the Suzuki SV650. 9% of the bike scrap last year was Suzuki, so I get 9 points for that.
Okay.
Triumph Tiger 800.
Yeah.
4 points for that. And then previous to that, it was the Triumph Trident 660, another Triumph, so I get another 4 points. That makes a grand total of 17.
Yeah.
Your most recent motorcycle.
Yeah, you've sold me out here because it's a Honda, isn't it?
Nah, well.
Are we going with what I'm riding currently? Oh, Ducati. Yeah.
And that gets 0 points because it's off the scale.
Exactly, because they're collectible. No one ever scraps a Ducati.
Okay. And previous to that.
Honda.
Sure, mate.
Previous was a Honda.
We'll glaze over that and move on. Previous to that?
Previous to... What was previous to the Honda? What did I have before that one?
Oh, wait. Africa Twin was previous to the Ducati. 14 points for that. So you've got three to play with. Don't just lie and say you got a Kiwi to call it a draw. You've got 3 points.
Genuinely, what was previous to the Africa Twin for me? Was it the Motegi? Did I ever... Was it the V9?
Oh, are you serious? I thought you were going to lose because I was thinking of the CB1000.
Oh, no, that was before. No.
Motegi
V9. Can't get me.
0%. Well done, mate.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
Okay, so you have better, well, more kind of mechanically sound taste in motorcycles.
Exactly. Yeah.
With 14 points for just the one Honda.
I mean, we're saying that here. I've broken down more times than you. So, yeah, this scale is flawed, but yes.
Well, there's some sort of sadistic self-loathing to owning Italian motorcycles in that people, it appears, will never bring themselves to scrap them, but they will constantly break down and keep inflicting terrible scenarios upon themselves where they're sat on the hard shoulder on a motorway and it's raining.
Yeah, you can play some sad music over that as well.
Everyone's got their kinks, mate, haven't they?
Yeah, they do, yeah.
You do you. I'll just scrap mine after a few years and start again with a fresh sheet of paper, you know. Moving on, we've got, well, two new segments here that I've just devised, and they're absolutely genius. One is comment of the week from the podcast channel, and the other is bike of the week, which I spotted, and I can't wait to show you this. Don't click it yet. We'll talk about the comment first.
Okay.
But this bike of the week is what I believe they refer to as a doozy. Comment of the week. I really like this one. It's from Requiem 2099, and he says, "It's wild to me that Honda hasn't released a CB750 Hornet-based sport bike yet. And I wonder if it's being held up by their US noise restrictions that are preventing them from releasing the US version of the CB750 Hornet. I'll read this through, mate, and then go back through with the details. They're finally bringing the Transalp to the US a year later than everyone else, but it's rumored to be cut down to 83 horsepower for the same restrictions that forced Kawasaki to GIMP." That's their words, not mine. The ZX4RR down to 56 horsepower.
Okay.
That effectively kills its HP horsepower advantage over Suzuki's 776cc twin platform. Acceptable in a less horsepower-focused adventure market with the Transalp, but a non-starter in the sporty, naked, and super sport markets. Now, Requiem 2099. Excellent analysis of the situation there. If you want a job to replace me as chief presenter on Motobob, just drop me a line. But I like that. There's a lot in there because I'm not necessarily... It's weird. Our biggest audience is in the US, but I'm not necessarily across what's available on the market there because all my dealings are with the UK marketing teams and PR teams and dealerships. Yeah. So it's nice to get these comments that give me a little bit of information. But the general idea is... You know, they've built the 750 Hornet, they've built the 750 Transalp. Everyone's expecting a twin-cylinder 750 sports bike with the same engine to compete with stuff like the Yamaha R7 and the Ninja 650 and the ZX4RR that we talked about, and also Suzuki's new GSX 8R. But they're saying they haven't released the Hornet yet, and they've managed to get the Transalp out, but it's cut down to 80 horsepower because when it revs too high, I believe... That's when it starts to make an absolute racket.
Mm.
And I believe the sound testing is kind of different in the US. Maybe they test the full rev range. Whereas I think in Europe, it's at It's static and at a certain point in the rev range. So this is why now, if you ride a bike like the new Street Triple, for example, if you are in neutral at a standstill and try and rev it, it just has a rev limiter at like 4,000 RPM. It doesn't let you rev it so that they can't noise test it. You can just full throttle it and it's not going to make
much
sound. Yeah, I believe that's why they do it. But maybe it's different in the US. Have you ever ridden a bike that has one of those limiters in neutral?
No.
Like the Harleys do it as well, like the Pan America and stuff.
I've never come across really it. It's really annoying, mate. Yeah, I can imagine
How are you meant to get people outside a pub or cafe to look at you and appreciate how cool you are if you can't rev it up to the rev light?
Hello?
Yeah.
Oi. Look at me. Look at my bike.
Roll up. You forget you've got the limiter and you just go, you twist the throttle wide open and it just goes like this. It goes like, that's what it sounds like. Actually, our podcast producer said the best part of the last episode was when we mimicked.
Oh, good. Yeah, yeah.
Motorcycles with our mouths.
Obviously.
So more of that. Anyway, so yeah, it's very interesting because Kawasaki have done the same thing with the ZX4RR that I just talked about, mate. The only good thing about that bike is you can rev the absolute balls off it and it'll make 77 horsepower.
Mm.
But if you limit that down to 56, it's just kind of like...
Go on, give me a demonstration.
The fundamental essence of the essence noise. Of what makes that bike good.
No, no, give the people what they want. Make the noise.
Oh, right, I see. Instead of like... It's like, which is less exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that is a bit of a, I don't know, dull situation if you're looking to buy some of these new bikes that are quite fun.
Yeah.
In the US, they're just getting like 10 or 20 horsepower knocked off the top and probably paying the same price for it. And it's a really good point. Read the Suzuki and Honda, they both came out with these 750 twins a year or two back. And they're both planning to make an adventure bike and naked and... maybe the sports bikes, but the Hornet has sold in incredible volumes in the UK. It was one of the best-selling bikes like every month last year because the price is really, really good. It's like £1,000 less than the Suzuki.
Yeah,
and it makes like 10, 15 more horsepower. So everyone's like, I think it's about 10 more horsepower maybe. Then you're starting to think in the US, well, I don't know, the Honda doesn't look that exciting anymore and it sort of levels it out. So for Honda, it's a bit of a shame.
Yeah. Unless you're going to go to the trouble of, you know, either de-restricting or doing some sort of tinkery with it to get it back up to you. I don't know if it's even possible, but that's just...
That's very...
It's a tough
underhand
sell, isn't
and
it?
Dishonest of you, mate. And I wouldn't do anything like that.
No.
No, I do think you can get the ZX4RR, maybe like flashed or something.
Yeah,
exactly. I don't
know.
But
then...
I know Yami Noob had one. And I'm pretty sure he did some bits on it. They always put exhaust on and stuff.
Yeah.
So maybe you can get a bit of that power back. But so I feel very bad for anyone in the US. Apart from moving on to Bike of the Week, which I believe is probably from the US. And, mate, just give this a click.
Oh, no, I've seen it. But yeah, I did. I checked it before and I lingered. I lingered on that one.
So maybe,
nice.
You know, there's some consolation for the people of the United States of America riding around on their 56 horsepower ZX4RRs, just knowing that bikes like this exist.
I mean, that's not getting through the noise restrictions, is it? Look at it.
Well, it probably doesn't have to be homologated, does it? So,
no, I guess
for
not.
Anyone who's listening on audio only... This is from Rusty Butcher on Instagram, and they've posted a picture of a custom build that they're currently in the process of, you know, knocking together. And how would you describe that, mate?
That is a very skinny looking Pan America.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pan America, mate. Yeah. Other than the headlight, I guess, the rest of it is so stripped back and bare. And just really showcases off that engine. It's got a really tall stance on it. It looks like a dirt bike.
I've actually done a bit of digging, mate. I went back through their posts. And there's a bit of a build list, which is really quite interesting. So here's the lowdown. You're exactly right. Pan America engine, 1250 version of their Revolution Max. But they've swapped the entire front end. So fork, wheel, brakes... all that kind of stuff, for a CRF 450, a completely different motorcycle from a completely different manufacturer. Basically just bolted straight on, they say, just needed a few spacers. Then they cut a hole in the swing arm and then re-welded some more metal back in there to allow more space for that big knobbly-bobbly rear tire.
Yeah.
What else? Oh, and the 18-inch rear wheel, because it's 17 on the Pan America. Mm. Cut the subframe off and built their own custom subframe, which is much smaller and thinner. Bolted on a Sportster S tank. And because that's on the same platform as the Pan America, they say it just bolted straight on because it had the same mounting points, which is really interesting. It's like a little peanut tank, isn't it? And it makes it look really cool.
Yeah. I didn't even notice that they changed that part of it, but you're right, it would look quite different with the bigger Pan America tank on it.
Totally. Yeah, it's a much, much bigger tank.
And it'd handle a lot differently.
Then they say they took off anything they don't need for racing it. So passenger pegs. Well, actually, on the Instagram post, it says passenger legs. I think that's a typo. I think it's passenger pegs because passengers do need legs for racing, probably. Well,
yeah, if you're going to take them on the race with you. You know, it would still help, though, wouldn't it? It's weight saving at the end of the day.
They do help if you're sitting on the back of a enduro version of a Pan America going around an enduro race. Took off anything, so took off the covers and anything that adds weight that they don't need. Still to go, they say, a new rear shock, a new rear fender, a seat, I guess, lowering the front end by 3 inches, rear brake caliper, some more side panels. And I think they've done all those stuff in that most recent picture because it looks all but finished.
Yes.
What really jumps out to me about this, mate, I mean, it's a crazy build, and I love it when people do stuff that just doesn't make any sense like this. But the one part of a Pan America that people really don't seem to like in the comments of our videos about it is that big wide headlight. Yeah. And it's the only damn thing they've saved apart from the engine.
Yeah, the irony of that, is quite funny. However, I think, well, it works better in this configuration. I haven't seen it from the front. It's very difficult to tell from the side. It might be a very different case from the front. But I think to maintain... I don't know if I'd even guessed that it was a Pan America without the headlight cover on it. I think...
It's probably just there to annoy people as well. Like, imagine zooming too, past somebody on... Like, if they're a decent rider, which they probably are, because you got to back yourself if you're going to do something silly like this, it's just there so that anybody who sees you come past, when you're overtaking people, just has a moment where they're like, "Was that Pan America?"
Yeah, that would be very satisfying. Yeah.
I'd imagine this thing puts out way too much power to actually even get any
an unreasonable amount. As soon as you've broken traction, the rest of it is just for show, isn't it? Really,
it's just power sliding around the whole course and then getting people to help them pick it up when it inevitably goes over. Wow, fantastic. I love that. In fact, if people want to leave a comment on this particular video on the Full Tank Motorcycle Podcast YouTube channel with suggestions for the next bike of the week, I'm not talking production, you know, standard builds. I wouldn't even say I'm that interested for this segment in kind of like playing it safe, retro customs. I like all that stuff, but, you know, we know what we're getting there. What we do want is stuff like this where someone's just done something illogical. It doesn't have to look good. It can just be of technical interest and maybe just appreciating the illogical, irrational nature of motorcyclists, because that's what I like. Anyway, Tim, nice way to round it off. Any closing thoughts from you?
Just that I want that bike. I want to have a go on that bike, although I think I'll need some platforms because it looks quite tall.
Yes, mate. Well, I'm sure they do a lowering kit for you, and it'll make a great commuter for your rides into London.
That's what I'm thinking.
Brilliant. Okay, well, that's where we tie this up. Many thanks for everybody listening. We'll be back next week with another episode, and we'll see you then.
Bye.